man with the game information. Game and Steve, Game and Steve. Xbox, Nintendo, PC, or PlayStation. Game and Steve, Game and Steve. Giving the news to the nerd generation. Game and Steve. Give me news.
Give me news.
Give me views.
Give me views.
Game and Steve.
Game and Steve. He got games.
What's to see?
What to see?
What to be?
Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together for the hardest working man in the game industry, the one-man vortex of gaming information, the man who eats sushi with Solid Snake, ladies and gentlemen, Gaming Steve!
Hey there, welcome to Gaming Steve, the home of intelligent game discussion. I am your host, Steven Glicker, and in this week's show, we go through the latest gaming news. In Spore Talk, I talk about the portable version of Spore. My preview this week is The Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion, part 2 of my hands-on preview from last week. My retro review this week is Planescape Torment for the PC. I then have that Name That Game contest that I have every week. Then I answer your questions in Show Mail, where I also answer some questions I got last week about The Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion. And then final thoughts. So before I go into the show, I got a whole bunch of things to go over real quick. So first of all, there's actually no review this week, if you might have noticed. I actually have been incredibly busy. March is always the craziest month for me, and I'm actually traveling to 5 different cities throughout just this month alone, and it's really nuts, so I really didn't have a lot of time to play anything new and give it enough of a go to really give you guys a detailed review. And also, to be honest, I'm trying to figure out ways to make the show a little easier for me, because right now it takes about 10 to 20 hours per week to actually do the show. It doesn't sound like it, but it actually is a huge amount of time. So the thing that takes the most is the reviews right now. It takes me, obviously, a while to play the games, and then to actually write up the reviews can take a couple of hours. So let me know what you guys think of that, actually, if you guys really like the review section, or if maybe if I can do something a little shorter that gives you guys the review. I know a lot of people do like it, because a lot of people get to find out about games they might not normally know about, but I'm trying to figure out a way to make it a little faster, quicker, easier for me, so it doesn't take so many hours out of my week. Because I'll be honest, there's just so much going on right now. I don't know how much time I'll have to do the reviews. I obviously will still do the show, but I just have to figure out a way to make it a little bit more streamlined so it doesn't take 15, 20 hours a week for me to do. The other thing is that, believe it or not, it is almost the one-year anniversary. The actual true one-year anniversary was March 9th, 2005, which is in 2 days. So I think next week I'll have a special one-year anniversary show, and I'm still trying to figure out exactly what I'm going to do on this show. A couple of people in the forums have given me a couple of ideas here and there, but a few small things I did. First of all, you might have noticed I redesigned the main site, made it a little clearer and easier to read. I pumped up the font, and I just made the whole thing much cleaner and easier. So I'm surprised not too many people have noticed that I did that, like maybe 3 or 4. But yes, it is a completely revamped design. Second of all, if you noticed on this episode, there's new cover art that was made by Scott Johnson from ExtraLife.com. You guys have probably seen his stuff. If not, definitely check out his site. It's an excellent blog/comic gaming comic website. It's extralife.com, and tell me what you think of the... I think it looks really good. It's sort of a funny take on my official logo. And finally, perhaps the best present of all is that we got a new member on the forums of Gaming Steve. Some guy, I think you probably guys have heard of him. His name was Will Wright. Yeah, he actually joined the site. I know he's been reading it on and off. I didn't know how much, but he officially joined the Gaming Steve forums over the weekend and posted and actually said who he was. In fact, I'll read you his message. He wrote, this was on March 3rd. He wrote, "Hey, everyone, I was wondering what was going on. I used to get maybe 2 or 3 questions a day about Spore from random people, which I enjoyed answering between meetings. A few days, that number shot up all the way to the double digits, about half my email now. I think I've tracked it back here. So this may be impossible for me to answer all, but I feel like it's unfair for me to answer some but not others. The volume drops back down. Hopefully I get back to answering them. I hope everyone understands. I imagine I'd rather get Spore sooner than have me answering emails all day. Now I'm sure a long discussion will ensure or whether or not I'm really me, chuckle, Will Wright. Actually, I meant ensue over whether it's really me. But anyhow, yeah, he joined the forums. And this is the funny thing, is he joined the forums. I was actually gone all weekend, and I didn't really have a chance to check the emails. So while I was gone, things got a little out of hand. And he, of course, he wrote to me and said, or he wrote on the forum, said, I knew this would happen. Look, I'll email Steve next week from the office. I'm not home now. And I'll VPN on this machine and confirm that this is indeed me. And here's the most interesting part. He writes, I actually do read these forums quite a bit. There's great stuff here. You all would be surprised how much our dev team follows this forum. As you might imagine, I don't have the time to answer the millions of questions that come up. Besides, my PR people would go crazy if I did. They do this all negotiating with magazines about new info, etc. Well, anyway, it gets very complicated, Will. So long story short is, yeah, the dev team, and there's straight from the horse's mouth, does read the Gaming Steve Spore forum and the regular forum quite a bit. They are reading your insights and information and all your questions and how you'd like to see the game being done. And some people ask whether this really was Will Wright. When I came back, I did get an email from Will. It's sent to me via a private email that no one else has this email address. There's only very few people that do. He sent it right away, and it's him. I can guarantee that it is him. So, yeah, it really is Will Wright on the forums, and that's just goes to show you how involved he is with the grassroots community. Anyhow, so definitely check out the Gaming Steve forums. He hasn't posted a huge amount, but I can tell you the one that he did post on, I think, has got it's getting a little crazy, that one thread. I might have to lock it soon because it's getting a little nuts. But please don't spam him or send him too many emails. I'm sure we're going to find out a huge amount about this game in the next few weeks at GDC. But that was a really nice present to have him personally come to the site and give us a stamp of approval. I really couldn't have asked for anything nicer than that. Thanks a lot, Will. And with that, let's get to the show.
Gaming news! Gaming news!
So in the game news this week, let's see. We got Sony sells the Metreon. The Metreon, if those of you are... probably have heard of it. It's this sort of this mall-based project that was in San Francisco that was owned by Sony. It had this IMAX-equipped movie theater, it had an arcade, some restaurants, and it had the Walk of Fame for video games, and it also had the official PlayStation store. And it also, that's where all the West Coast launch parties were for like the PlayStation 2 and the PSP. And Sony said they're selling it now for an undisclosed sum of money, and it's probably going to turn into a more traditional shopping mall or something. The store isn't going anywhere, the Sony store, but they're not going to own it anymore. And I actually, even though I've been to San Francisco a lot, I never went to it. Last year was the first time I ever went to the Metreon, and it was actually right across the street from GDC. And I have to say, I was really unimpressed with it. It seemed like it was sort of dead, quite frankly. Half the stores were either empty, or there was seemed very little foot traffic. It just sort of was a weird store. And quite frankly, the Sony store was no different than really, I'd say the PlayStation store was really no different than any other Sony store you can find in a lot of shopping malls. It was a little bigger, but you know, a lot of shopping malls now have these Sony stores, and it really was sort of the same thing. And there was nothing special about it. I mean, yeah, there's the Walk of Fame, but it really felt dilapidated and sort of almost like a ghost town. So it doesn't really surprise me that Sony is selling this thing. But hopefully they'll sell it and they'll turn it to a much better, nicer shopping arcade of some sort. It's also in such prime real estate. I'm sure they got a mint for that thing. It's right across the street from the convention center in San Francisco. Next is Webzine signs a deal with Red 5 Studios. So this is a big deal, and people might not know about this, but Red 5 Studios is actually made was formed last September by the former World of Warcraft developers, including Mark Kern, art director William Petras, and online director for Asia, Taiwan Yu. And I have to say, I don't know if you guys know who those guys are, but they were the guys who officially made, oh, I don't know, Diablo 2, Warcraft 3, StarCraft. And Mark Kern is the guy who pretty much designed and produced World of Warcraft. So this is a killer team. I mean, these three guys are monsters. So I'm going to definitely watch this to see what game they come up with. they will probably do another Guild Wars, not Guild Wars directly, but I have a feeling they're going to do something very successful, because these aren't just schlubs here. These are some of the most talented people in the MMO market space. And they signed with Webzine, which is a Korean publisher, in case you've never heard of them. And they've done some really big games. They did, I believe they're the ones that did this game called MU. It's a huge game in Korea. It's does almost nothing here, but it's a very, very big game in Korea. So definitely keep up with Red 5. I'm definitely going to take a look and see. Maybe I'll try to get a little talk with Mark or something. Speaking of MMOs, Dungeons & Dragons Online officially launched last week. It's Atari and Turbine's classic fantasy franchise-inspired MMORPG. It comes to North America. And, of course, it's made by the same guys who did Asheron's Call and Asheron's Call 2. And it is Dungeons & Dragons Online. It's based on the 3.5 rule set. And I think I'm the only person who hasn't played this game. It's like everyone on the earth seems to have been able to get into the beta and play it. But just to let you know, I couldn't get in. I don't know. I couldn't get into the beta. I couldn't get in. I couldn't get anything on this game. I kept writing them and even talking to the guys from Turbine, and for some reason I couldn't get anything on it. So I do want to try it out, although all my friends who were playing it canceled their accounts, so it's not necessarily a good sign. And I'm a pretty big D&D guy. I actually, believe it or not, I still play a campaign. My friend just started one a couple of months ago. And it's a classic 1.0 rules, and it's pretty brutal, to say the least. I think the other members of the party are on their fourth or fifth characters in just a couple of weeks. He just keeps killing us off, but I actually got my fighter up to level 4, and he's almost up to level 5, because quite frankly, he runs away, and that's one of the things, is that, as he said, quote, "You're not playing World of Warcraft where you win every battle, and this one, if you lose, you lose." So there was actually a good encounter where a white dragon came, an ancient white dragon flew down, and everyone ran in the party except for my two other members. I ran, and they stayed and fought, and of course, level 4 and level 3 fighters got slaughtered by this thing, so he plays a pretty rough campaign. But long story short is I do like D&D quite a bit, and I'd be very curious to try this game, but I've heard a lot of really mixed things about it. But who knows? Who knows? I haven't even read any reviews of it yet. And yet more MMO news. World of Warcraft hit 6 million people. That's right. Last week they announced that they hit 6 million people. They're also releasing a new Spanish version of the game. It's going to come. It's going to wherever you can play the English, French, German versions. And wow, that's pretty smart idea, I tell you, because I'm sure that just the Spanish version alone will get them a couple of million more people into the game. And that's a pretty monstrous undertaking. It's like, think about that. Every single thing, and this is something you don't really think about. It's like every time they release a patch, it's like, oh, okay, they're just releasing a patch. No, it's like they have to release the patch, and then they have to release it in English, French, German, now Spanish, as well as Chinese and Korean, and I might have missed a few languages in there, but that is nuts. I mean, they have to translate this thing into so many languages, put it on all the servers. It's really a monstrous undertaking, and I know when people get upset because, oh, why isn't the patch out, or why aren't these things in? It's not that simple. It's not like, oh, okay, let's just patch this game and it's done. It's not in one country. It's worldwide, and all these different SKUs and different versions. It's unbelievably tricky. And I know they don't release the patches simultaneously in all the other countries, but still, they do try, from what I know. But yeah, keeps on growing, and I don't see it stopping. You know what happens, at least what they've been talking about with World of Warcraft, is this thing happens with where it becomes so embedded in culture, is that it actually becomes, it hits this tipping point in where a game or something like, say, a Star Wars movie is a perfect example. Actually, this is the perfect example. Star Wars 1, 2, and 3. Those movies, I mean, a lot of people knew they were bad. They were going to be bad. And even after they came out, like Star Wars 1 or Star Wars 2, even though they got bad reviews and bad word of mouth, they still did great, because so many people saw that movie, is that if you didn't see that movie, you weren't in the know. You were out. In other words, it was a tipping point. There was more people who saw it who didn't see it. So if you didn't see it, you were out of the loop. You know, and that's rare, but that's how things become cultural phenomenons, is that, you know, people who normally might not actually go and do something will actually do it. And that even explains Madden and some of the other very, very big games, and now World of Warcraft, is that so many people do it that, you know, if all your friends play Madden, that you might get Madden just to try it, just so that you're in the know and you're not an outsider within your friends. Same thing with World of Warcraft. It's like everyone's talking about it. It's becoming such a big hit, such a big phenomenon. I don't know a single person, quite frankly, who hasn't tried the game. And if you haven't, it's almost like, how can you not at least try it? Because everyone's talking about it, everyone's played it, and it has become, you know, almost like, a cultural phenomenon. And I'd say the same thing with The Sims, same thing, is that, you know, you almost have to at least try The Sims, because everyone seems to have played that game at least once in their life. And or Pac-Man, or, you know, any games of classic nature. But it is pretty interesting to see when this happens. Next up, Live Arcade gets 5 more games. They are adding Ultimate Mortal Kombat 3, Cyber Ball, Root Beer Tapper, Paperboy, and Defender are being added to the Live Arcade roster. There's no timetable on when these games are coming up, but I do like that they're cutting the really old games. It's not just like the newer type games are the remakes, but you got Defender, Paperboy, Root Beer Tapper in there. Root Beer Tapper is a great game, and if people are playing a Diner Dash, which is a very, very big game for the leisure set, it's a great game, by the way, that Diner Dash. I know it's not a hardcore gamer's game, it's a very casual game, but man, it's super addictive. I just love Tapper, and I still play it, believe it or not, every so often. Defender, perhaps one of the hardest games. You can't really appreciate it unless it's an arcade version. I wonder how they're going to do it, because I believe there were 7 buttons on the controller for Defender, so I really don't know how well that's going to translate onto even the gamepad. And then finally, Paperboy, which had one of the greatest controllers of all time. It actually had Paperboy handlebars, like for a BMX bike, built into the arcade machine. And that was actually a very tricky game, and one of my favorite games, of course, of all time as well. Another more Microsoft news. Microsoft is starting their $10 Greatest Hits program. So a lot of its games that were Greatest Hits are now going down to $9.99, and it's a pretty good deal. That's the good news, is that they're called the Best of the Platinum Hits. And normally these were $20. Now they're $10, which really is a great, great deal. The bad news is the games aren't exactly the greatest selection of games here. You have Counter-Strike, The Elder Scrolls 3, Morrowind, Enter the Matrix, Frenzy, Fusion Frenzy, Mech Assault, Project Gotham Racing 2, Shrek 2, Soul Calibur 2. Soul Calibur 2, that's a good one. Tom Clancy, okay. Well, I'm just going to say Tom Clancy because there's all of them are Tom Clancy. Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon Island Thunder, Rainbow Six 3, Splinter Cell, Pandora Tomorrow. Okay, that's worth $10. Splinter Cell, that also is worth $10. Tony Hawk's Underground, no, that's worth $10. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 4, that's worth $10. And True Crime Streets of L.A., I don't think that's worth $10. But if you have not tried any of these games and you're a little bored and want to whip out something for your good old Xbox, check these games out. I'm not exactly sure when they're coming into stores. I think they already are. I think they're already $10 in the stores either now or like any day now. Finally, speaking of Elder Scrolls, yes, the Elder Scrolls is gone gold, and it is shipping March 20th. Oh boy, what's that? 2 weeks away. 2 weeks away, we will get the Elder Scrolls Oblivion. Is that 2 weeks away or 3 weeks away? Can't seem to do the math in my 2 weeks. I think it's 2 weeks. Well, anyhow, yes, it's coming out both on the PC and the Xbox. A lot of people are super excited about this, as am I. But I actually, as soon as I heard it was going gold, I wrote the team, and I said, when am I getting my copy, and when am I going to get to play it, and sure enough, I'll be getting it. Unfortunately, I'm going to be getting it while I'm at the Game Developers Conference, so I'm not actually going to get to play this thing until you guys will probably be playing it well week or two after I even get my hands on it, because I'm going to be traveling when this thing comes out. But yeah, I'm pretty excited about this. I haven't been this excited about a game in quite some time, and someone actually wrote me. I'll answer this question now. Someone actually wrote me a very cool question. They said, "Why are games called Gone Gold? What the heck does that mean?" And that's an excellent question. Just to let you know, the term "Gone Gold," I'm 99% sure this is correct, but When there's different stages for games, there's a alpha stage, a beta stage, and you've heard like final beta, and that's the different stages and where the games are at different playable states. An alpha stage is usually when the game is, it's playable, but like no graphics are in the game. It's just core gameplay, and there's usually no UI or interface design at all in the game. It's really just in there to maybe test technology or to test out basic gameplay elements. The game actually works, but barely. And alphas, you'll never see alphas. It's extremely rare. And the reason is because alphas are so unlike the final game is that you don't want to see it because it'll really taint you on what the actual final game is going to look like. It's almost only used for internal purposes. That's why you never see or hear about them. And like, for instance, I played like the alpha of Warcraft 3 and World of Warcraft, and it was so different. I mean, it was just World of Warcraft alpha. I mean, there was nothing in the game. You know, towns were not even built. Half the world was gone. The balance was way the heck off. I couldn't even get past level 7. It was so hard. It was just crazy, the alpha version. But the functionality, in fact, the whole human section of the game was completely done when I played, but nothing else. So just give you an idea of where that's at. And then beta is really, it's much more finalized and closer to being done. I'd say it's usually like 80 to 90% done at beta stage, maybe the last certain levels aren't done or multiplayer aspects aren't done, things like that. But basically, the game is complete. They're just sort of tweaking it and finishing up some rough patches and debugging it. Final beta is usually a final push where they just have the game is done, and then usually there might be a few bugs or something left in the game, and final beta can last anywhere from a few weeks to a few months, depending on how good the game is designed and how much bugs are in it. But final beta is usually the game is done. And then final gone gold means the game is done. And what they do is that they actually press the final disc that they're going to use to make the game. So the development studio will take the disc, they'll actually make it, you know, on their computers. It's just a normal disc. I believe it's nothing different than your regular CD. You know, usually you make a couple of versions of the CD, you send it out to the plant to press, and that's it. And you know, that's the master, the gold copy. And I believe it's originally called Gone Gold because in the old days, and this is like 10, 15 years ago, when you went to CD manufacturing plants, what they would do is this correct? There's a thing called the Glass Master. I might be 100% wrong on this, but I believe what it was is that the Glass Master, and that's the master disc that they use to press. And there's a Glass Master and then there's Metal Master is where they used to actually press all the discs for all the CDs, and it was actually gold colored. So that's why it's called Gone Gold, because then you have to make this Glass Master, Metal Master that's used to press. And the Glass Master is actually the disc that is used to make the thousands upon thousands of actual CDs that go in stores. So it's sort of one of those things, it's like, you know, it's one of those things that doesn't even exist anymore as far as I know. I don't even know. I don't think they're any color. Maybe they're still gold. I haven't been to a CD manufacturing plant in a long time. But that's why it's called Gone Gold, because it's just the final stage. And maybe I didn't answer that at all. I don't know. I might be 100% wrong on that. I hope not. I really do. But I'm pretty sure I'm right on this one. Anyhow, thanks. Well, who am I thanking? Thanks to me for answering a question someone else wrote. Let's see, real quick, what else? Report on Origami. Yeah, I got a whole bunch of emails last week about this new portable Xbox PC. No one knows what the heck it is. You know, a lot of people think Microsoft's going to go into the handheld market, and there was this secret Microsoft device that seemed like it was a portable PC with gaming functionality. There was this video of someone running Halo on it. And it was called Project Origami, or the Origami Project. And supposedly it's going to be announced this week at CeBIT PC Trade Expo in Germany on March 9th. But from what I can tell, it looks like a portable computer. It looks like a tablet PC, a smaller tablet PC that might be nice to hold movies and music and whatnot. But It doesn't look like anything else. It's not a DS. It's not a PSP. It just looks like another portable PC. Most people don't have these tablet PCs. I actually have one, and a few of my friends have these tablet PCs. So they're very popular, especially in the pharmaceutical circles. A lot of doctors use these things because you can write right on the screen. They're really easy to use, and it just looks like another one. The technology has really come a long way in the last few years, but as soon as I saw it, I thought, to me, it looked exactly like a tiny portable tablet PC and nothing more. And they even, Microsoft themselves said that the Halo was just a demo. It was just a concept video, and then that might not necessarily even be able to run Halo. So from what everyone's been saying, what I've been reading, no one's 100% sure, but it looks like it's just going to be something that you can watch movies on and do some light, computing, whether it's surfing the web or taking notes, things like that. But you know what? If it's $500 or $1,000 for this thing, if you're going to watch movies on it, I'll be honest. I went down to Radio Shack and I got this personal DVD player, which is a 3.6-inch wide screen, and this thing cost me $5. Yeah, that's right, $5. And this thing's pretty good, let me tell you. It even has inputs if you want to put your GameCube or your Xbox into it. It actually works. It's pretty nice. But yeah, it was $5 because they were running some special rebate on it. And after the rebate, I think it was like $69, and the rebate was like for $65. So after it was all said and done, or $70, it was $5 for this thing. So yeah, am I going to go out there and spend $500 to $1,000 for a portable DVD/laptop, or am I going to go and get a really nice DVD player for just a couple of bucks? And you go to Best Buy, those things are like $100 now, and they're really in good quality, $200. So I don't know. I don't know how good this thing's going to be. Let's see. Two more real quick news stories. Another analyst predicts PS3 delays. So just yesterday, Sony finally officially said the PSP will not be in stores in the U.S. PSP. I said PSP, didn't I? I meant PS3. Sorry, PS3. Another analyst predicts PS3 delays. But they officially said that the PS3 will not be out until the winter of 2006 in the U.S. Now, I don't know if you know this, but they've been saying, they being Sony, have been saying for the last few, years or year, that it's coming out in the spring, that the PS3 is coming out in the spring, and they never said otherwise. Even though no one had, the final dev kits were not sent out, no one had the final kits. So that's sort of the first problem. The second problem is that there's no demo games of any sort whatsoever being shipped anywhere. So there's no way this thing was coming out in the spring. But you know what? Sony is not going to say that until it's as late as possible, because people keep saying the spring, and then it builds up excitement. Why are they going to actually say, oh, we're sorry, we meant the, it's not going to come out until the winter 2006. They're going to wait to the very last possible minute, and they did yesterday, and it was in an interview in Variety magazine of all places. They sort of did it in a strange location to do that. They didn't even put it in a mainstream like gaming publication. But this story is that this analyst, Sean Mill at Friedman Billings Ramsley, he said that he doesn't think it's going to come out until 2007 in the U.S., and it might come out in Japan. He says it might miss the spring launch in Japan and perhaps summer as well. I would say, yeah, I think it's going to miss spring in Japan because, as I said before, the final hardware hasn't been determined yet, and summer as well. And it's going to take a while for them to actually, build up and make these units. So, until you hear that the final version, and that's going to get a lot of press, the final hardware specs have been hammered out for the PS3, don't even expect it. Don't even expect this thing to come out yet. And even just the number of games out on this thing. Right now, all we've heard is Fight Night Round 3, Medal of Honor, Airborne, Def Jam 3, and of course the next Madden game is going to be out on this thing. But there's very little press as to even what games are coming out on this. So I don't expect to hear too much. But at E3 is when you'll really probably hear a ton of PS3 info. You'll actually even get to see it and play it and try it out for the first time, or at least some people will, like me. Finally, Rockstar Games. So many people thought this was a joke, and even I thought it was. But Rockstar Games is coming out with table tennis. That's right, a ping pong simulator for the Xbox 360. I swear to God. Developed by Rockstar San Diego, the studio behind Midnight Club Street Racing and Red Dead Revolver, table tennis is set to ship in North America for the Xbox 360 on May 22nd, and it will be available for $39.99. So, yeah, I guess that's one way to avoid controversy, is to go all the way to the other way. And they said they're really exciting. They said it's a very simple, addictive game that would take advantage of next-gen hardware. So, yes, a ping-pong simulator. I have to say it looks really good, you know, for being a ping-pong simulator. And I have to say, this is probably getting a lot more press than any other table tennis ping pong simulator would ever get. Is, you know, Rockstar, people who make some of the goriest, grittiest, most adult games of all time, comes out with table tennis, you know, it's going to get press because it's just so different. And I would like to see Jack Thompson boycott this. I wonder if he'll figure out a way. It's kind of nice they're doing this, I have to say. I like it. And that is it for the news this week. So in Spore Talk, where I talk about Will Wright's upcoming game, Spore, I am going to talk about something that was in the news last week. All of a sudden, Spore popped in back into the mainstream. A lot of people are talking about it. It sort of, you know, it was announced and then it sort of disappeared. And a lot of people have been really excited and expecting this game. But I knew this was going to happen because there's two talks on Spore at the Game Developers Conference in 2 weeks directly, and then Will Wright's giving a speech, and I'm sure it's going to be something unique. So that means that there's something, you know, whether it's minor press and PR, but some things are happening. And sure enough, there was a recent job posting on GameDev.net for a, quote, handheld designer Spore position. And the ad read, located in beautiful Emeryville, California, the Spore team is looking for an experienced designer that will be responsible for designing, creating, and maintaining game systems and content for Spore handheld titles. So, and the person will also be asked to drive the vision design for both the internal and external design teams for launch of handheld titles for Spore. So, of course, a lot of people are going crazy saying, oh, my God, is this going to be a handheld title? How is that going to work? You know, so, you know, the download capability of all the creatures, blah, blah, blah. People are going nuts. Well, let me tell you one thing I know about EA and Will Wright and Maxis and all of that is that take a look at, what The Sims 2 has done. Now, I'm not even just talking about The Sims. I mean The Sims 2. The Sims 2 is on every single possible system on Earth. If you want to get it for your cell phone, you can get it for your cell phone. You want to get it for the PSP, you want to get it for... Is it out for the PSP? I know it's coming out. You have the PS2. You have the DS. I mean, you name it. Every single type of console known to mankind has Spore. So, yeah, I quite think that Spore, in some way, shape, or form, is going to come out for these other systems. So, it's news, but it's not that surprising to me, and probably to all you guys out there, you're probably, you know, wondering, and, you know, it's nice to have official confirmation that this thing is going to come out for every single system known to mankind. What I'm really interested to know is it going to use the same database? So, those of you, of course, know how Spore works, is that there's going to be one massive, well, at least in theory, because I haven't talked to them recently, but in theory, it's going to be one massive database for all the creatures, all the planets, everything. Everything that's made in Spore is one gigantic database, and that's where everything's going to be called from. But is it going to be different for, say, the 360 version, for maybe the DS version, for other versions, etc., etc.? Oh, yeah, by the way, so a 360 version, you know, it hasn't been announced, but I imagine there will be one, and it might be a while. I mean, the PC version will be the first version. It'll probably have the same development cycle as The Sims 2. As, you know, the PC version comes out first, and then once that one's set and done, and then they'll have obviously continuous expansions coming out for this thing forever and ever, then the new versions will come out. And by the way, yeah, so the question I get the most while I'm talking about Spore, I get this question, oh, I don't know, every single day. When is it coming out? 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 Okay, as far as we know, it's coming out in fall 2006, which means this year. So supposedly the fall of this year. And I have no idea how close that really is. But from what I hear, they're doing a really, really great job over there developing this thing. Hopefully they actually are going to hit this date. We will know in a few months whether or not they really are going to hit it, especially once we go to E3, because then we'll really know. Wow, and that's 2 months away. Oh, my God, it's 2 months away. I can't believe E3 is, like, just sneaking up on us. And, God, it's going to be crazy, to say the least. But anyhow, definitely expect Spore to be everywhere. It'll probably be different, though, for every version. Like, for instance, how it works for the current Sims 2 is that it's slightly different, and in fact, in some ways, completely different experiences. It's almost like a single-player game on The Sims 2. It's less open-ended than it is on the PC. It actually has a lot more goals and things you have to do. The other thing about Spore that I find so interesting is because I just rewatched the video a couple of times, and it's funny because I've seen the video a lot of times. It's up on my main website, gamingsteve.com, if you want to check it out. But the video presentation that Will gave last year, you know, he explains, and I kind of missed this even myself, how the actual game itself really starts to take place when you're in space. That's sort of the real game, and everything leading up to the game is sort of building, you know, your creatures and building your society and building your worlds. But then once you get to the space level where you could explore the galaxy, that's where the real game starts and begins. So that makes me wonder, is that for the handheld versions, how is that going to work? Are you going to, you know, quickly go up to the space level and that's where the game's really going to take place? Are you going to actually just spend more time on lower levels, maybe just the planetary aspects, and the space is a smaller area? It's hard to really say how that's going to work, but I am pretty excited, to say the least. But yeah, this is the first of a lot of news we're going to start hearing about Spore, and this is no mistake. These things are not leaked. These things aren't leaked by accident, okay? These are it's very, very rare. You know, of course, it does happen, but it's extremely, extremely rare that these are accidents. Much like when Blizzard posted a month ago about looking for new people for Diablo, you know, from the team behind Diablo. Let me tell you, that's no mistake. That's no accident. Same way that this is no accident. Because I'll give you a perfect example. My buddy, when he worked and got a job, he was the first person hired in Blizzard to do 3D modeling, and he does all the dungeon building for World of Warcraft, is that he was contacted by Blizzard, and they didn't tell him. They said, you know, we have a job for you if you might be interested. He was doing Quake levels at the time, and they said, we really like your Quake levels. Would you like to come out here and fly out, and we'll interview you? So they flew him out. They said, you know, they didn't tell him anything. They didn't tell him a thing about the game. They said, look, we have this project that requires 3D level design. We can't tell you what it is, but, you know, this is the salary and this is what it pays, and are you interested in a job? And then they flew him back. He said yes. Then they said okay. And then they flew him back, and then he started the job. And then after he signed the NDA and he actually started working the company, did they tell him what he was working on? So think about that. He moved from New York to Irvine, California. They never told him what he was working on. He accepted this job for Blizzard, and it was total secrecy until he finally showed up for work on his first day, and then they finally told him what he was going to be doing for a living. So trust me, these guys know how to keep secrets, okay? These things aren't leaked. It's like, oh, it's an accident. That's not an accident, okay? People work on these games for years, and no one ever hears anything about them. And there's entire games that have come and gone that you've never even heard about that were never discussed anywhere outside of, you know, internally at the game development studio. So, once again, this is subtle secret, you know, it's probably a real job offer, but it's also a little bit of PR, a little bit of press, and don't expect to see the last of it. So that's it for Spore Talk for this week, and let's get to my preview of The Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion Part 2.
Game Previews!
Hey, so welcome to Part 2 of my preview for The Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion. Wow, a whole bunch of people wrote to me yesterday because I'm a day late on this, and I apologize. As I said, I was traveling, and I didn't get back till midnight last night, Monday, so I didn't get a chance to actually do this on my normally scheduled time. But here is the second part of my time with Oblivion. For those of you who missed last week's preview, I went through sort of the basic overview of the game. It wasn't too hardcore, but I did want everyone to be able to understand how the game works and how it's played. I played it for about 6 hours on both the PC and the Xbox 360. And last I left off is that I created a battle mage, which is a character which specializes in magic, but also has the ability to fight, and has a little bit of thieving skills as well. And I just left the catacombs / sewers and just came out into the real world. The king gave me an amulet, and I had to bring it to Joffrey, who was the leader of the Blades, and get my next quest. Now, from there, once I came out of the sewers, I'm just going to talk about sort of the rest of the game and how free and open the game is to play. The first hour of the game is really very straightforward tutorial, but from there, the actual real experience of the Elder Scrolls comes into play, is that you can do anything. And in fact, when you first start off, by the way, that's when you unlock your very first achievement, is when you get out of the sewers. That's your first achievement's unlocked. And then a tutorial box will actually come up and say, okay, whatever you want to do, you can do. If you want to go on the main quest, go right ahead. But if you just want to explore the world, go right ahead. And again, it's nice little hand-holding, but not so much. You know, it's not too over-the-top. It just tells you just enough what you need to do. So when I started out, I was on this hillside. There was a dock in front of me with this beautiful lake, and I can see some ruins in the background. And above me was an Imperial City. So I figured, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go check out the Imperial City. So I walked back up to the Imperial City, and it took like a minute. I went back up the hill, and that's actually where I just escaped from. Entering the city, takes a few seconds to load, no real time whatsoever, and walked in. The cities themselves, very, very well done. They're very easy to navigate and get around. The best thing about the cities is that you can go up to a guard at any time and just ask them wherever you need. So you can go up to a guard, they'll come up to you, and everything is, all the text in this game, all of it is spoken text. Very important to note that. You can ask them where the guilds are, and the nice thing is that, for instance, in this Imperial City was so small, I believe this is correct, is that there was no guilds or anything in this city. It was just too small of a city. So they actually said, no, you don't want to go here, you want to go to another city, you want to check out, you know, if I was looking for certain things, they would tell you exactly where you wanted to go. I walked around the city a bit. To be honest, Imperial City was kind of boring. The most exciting thing about the city, I will say, is that as night was falling, you would actually see the sky change from day to night. Very beautiful, really well done. And then all of a sudden, you started to hear thunder in the background. And I was like, oh, is it going to rain? And then it just started to downpour, like right in the middle of the city. It was really cool. And you could actually see people walking around. And this part of the Radiant AI is that people go about their business. So as it was getting from day to night, you would see people actually close up shops, walk back to their homes. You would see people sort of change shifts. It was really cool. It looked like a real city. You know, something, I live in Manhattan, at 4 o'clock every day, all the cabs go from one shift to another. And you see every day from 4 to 5 o'clock, all these shifts changing. And it looked like that. It looked like, oh, day shift is now switching to night shift. And I can't think of a single RPG I've ever seen that does this as well. So even though I was a little bored in the Imperial City, just seeing the Radiant AI in action and seeing how it worked so effortlessly, it was a thing of beauty, to be honest. So after walking around, talking to some people, there wasn't seem to be a lot going on. I decided, what the heck, I'm going to go back to my next contact at Joffrey, who was at Wayden Priory, and I needed to get there. And there's two ways you can get there. You can either open up your map and just do an instant transportation and just double-click on any point in the map. So if you ever want to go to a city, you can just double-click on there and voila, or say double-click, I'm saying if you have the PC or on the Xbox, you just click on it and poof, you're there. And there's actually even different sections of the city. So some of the larger cities, you can say if you want to go to the west side or you want to go to the north side, the east side, etc. If you want to go to the outside gate. So there's usually a couple different entrances. But I wanted to actually get through the old-fashioned way and just sort of exploring the countryside. So I left the city And right outside the city was a little stable. And I was talking to the people there, but I couldn't seem to figure out how to buy a horse. I don't even think it was an option to buy a horse. So there was a couple of horses there, and, oh, I don't know. I didn't really want to walk, so I just stole the horse. Yeah. And as soon as they stole the horse, all of a sudden everyone started to chase after me. And, yeah, it was pretty funny. So I stole the horse. Everyone's chasing after me. I ran away. And to control the horse was pretty simple. Switched to third-person view when I controlled the horse. It was a lot easier. And one thing you notice with the horse is, though it's much, much faster, the left-right movement is much less, it's a lot touchier. Is that it's not as easy to, you don't have as much range of movement. So you can move to the left and to the right, but it's a lot slower. You can't, like, turn on a dime like you can with your regular character. So you really have to sort of guide. It's almost like guiding a ship is guiding your horse. But it really, really looked great. I was following the main road, and I was just sort of, you know, moving the horse down the main road, checking out the landscape, checking out the moon and the stars. And then all of a sudden, a wolf came out of nowhere. It attacked me. One thing is that you can't fight while you're on the horse. So the wolves or anything can't attack your horses. So I quickly jumped off the horse, and the horse actually started to fight back a little with the wolf. But I didn't want my horse to die, so I quickly drew out my sword, killed the wolf, and noticed that there was a cave nearby. And that's one thing that when you notice is that often there are like random deer and there's random like animals in the wilderness like wolves and such, but usually those wolves or these bad creatures or whatever you want to call them, monsters, they're usually near something of importance. They are randomly around, like I would find a wolf here and there, but usually if you find a wolf, at least my experience in the few hours I was playing, is you might want to look around a little because usually maybe something's there. Usually they're not just there, they're usually guarding something or there's a reason they're there. And sure enough, I found this cave out of nowhere and I was like, cool. And all of a sudden I popped into it and it was called the Green Mead Cave and it was added to my map and I figured, hey, what the heck? While I'm here, let's just explore this cave. It was a dungeon. It's one of the 200 dungeons in the game itself. And once it was added to my map, I can then access it at any point in time. So it had the ability to instantly jump back to it. And that's the one thing is that Pete has said in the past about the game. Pete Hines, PR manager for the makers of Oblivion, Bethesda Software, is that if you don't explore the map, you'll never find these things. You know, the caves aren't on your map. You actually have to find the caves. You have to find these dungeons. You have to find the ruins. And unless you do, you'll never get to these things. I mean, a few will appear based on quests, but more or less, you have to find them. So anyhow, once I entered the cave, you know, quick loading screen, really nothing to even talk about. The cave itself was just absolutely beautiful. It looked incredibly realistic. The floor looked, you know, like, you know, broken rock. It was different ledges and stuff. And the ceiling actually had roots, like trees. You could actually see the trees and roots growing out of the ceiling itself. It looked really great. There was puddles of water all over the place. And immediately I encountered a new monster, flying imps. The flying imps were pretty much a pain in the neck. They would shoot fireballs at you. So normally I would go around, shoot arrows at them. One nice thing is when you shoot arrows, it kind of works like Dungeon Siege 2, is the arrows stick into the creatures. So it's cool when you shoot a couple arrows at them, and then they come charging at you, and you see the creatures with the arrows sticking out of them, and then quickly would dispatch them with magic and a sword. Inside these caves, or the cave I was in, there was a lot of chests. Tons and tons and tons of chests. None of them were too difficult to open. I was able to, most of them were just opened by themselves. Sometimes I had to use lock picking. They were always on the easy side, so I was able to increase my lock picking ability. But, you know, just by using my magic, I was able to increase my magic ability, become a better battle mage by fighting. I was able to increase my ability in using heavy armor as well as my sword ability, and even just jumping around, I was able to increase, I believe it's the aerobic skill. Just by jumping around, fighting, it automatically increased. One nice thing about the cave was is that after a while, I came across this really large corridor, and it was flooded, and it wasn't just flooded like, oh, it's like foot level. It was actually chest level. So I had to jump into the water and go down entire corridors where there would be, you know, fights going on in chest high water. Again, really nice touch, and it looked very realistic, like, you know, this was a natural cavern that's been flooded over time. And then eventually I get to a point where the entire cavern was flooded and I had to actually go underwater. And one of the things, when you go underwater, of course, your torch goes out. So you know, when your torch goes out, you just have to relight it when you come back, but it does make navigating in the dark water a little bit trickier. Towards the end of the cave, it took me about half an hour to kill everything, kill all the imps, and explore the cave. There was four other mini caves, and like as you go to each cave section, it has its individual name. Each section's named by its own thing, and it also has its own loading screen. There's its own separate map too, so you can actually very easily, you know, go from section to section. You don't have one insanely massive, gigantic map of the entire cave system. You were able to see where the rest of the cave was, so you know how to exit. But more or less, it was pretty linear, to be honest. There were some like little side passages, but it was a very linear cave. Eventually, I came to a very, very large lake. And this is one of the few things that surprised me in the game, is I was only being attacked by imps throughout the entire cave system, and I was already a good half hour into the cave system. So I walked a little bit too close to the ledge of the water, and all of a sudden some giant crabs jumped out of the water and started to attack me, and almost came very, very close to killing me because I was not looking down. So again, nice little touch is I did not expect those giant crabs to come charging out of the water and attack me because I was only looking up at the time. Luckily, I killed them. Wasn't too bad. I did see there was a ledge on top of the cave, and I knew I had to get up there. Walked around the cave a bit, couldn't quite figure out how to do it, and then I jumped in the water. Sure enough, there was an underwater passageway that I can swim under, get to the other side, and then there was sort of this like stone staircase, a rough staircase that would get you upstairs. I got up to the top level. It was sort of a dead end, and this, you know, I figured, okay, you know, it's the end of the cave, pretty nice, and it was a nice little dungeon, a little repetitive, there were some aspects, and there was like a treasure chest there, and I figured, okay, you know, I'll go get the treasure, and then all of a sudden, the scariest thing by far that happened to me in the game is a gigantic mountain of something just popped up and started to attack the crap out of me, and I was like, I don't know what the heck was going on. It actually turned out to be a absolutely huge, monstrous crab. It was a crab that's like the size of almost a house that was attacking me. Luckily, it wasn't that hard, and I killed it pretty easily without too much difficulty. But just from the fear factor, because it was hiding in the corner, and it almost looked like a part of the natural cave itself, but it popped up, attacked me, and almost killed me, and then I killed it. No problem. It actually was the boss creature, as Pete said. Most of these caves have final boss creatures, and this one just happened to be a gigantic crab, but it was a nice mix. I like that it wasn't like a super imp or something like that, is that the whole cave seemed to have all these imps flying throughout that I was fighting, but then at the very end, I was actually killing crabs, and it sort of, you know, mixed it up. So by far one of the most frightening encounters I experienced. One thing that really sort of stunk, and I actually confirmed this with Pete, is after I got to the end of the cave, I was like, okay, now what? How do I get out of the cave? And Pete's like, well, you got to walk back. And damn, that totally stunk. He said, most caves do not have an entrance at the end, and you have to do walk back. So, you know, it wasn't too bad, I guess, but you know, because it was a mini dungeon, but it was a good 5-10 minutes for me to walk back. The good news is I was able to go through and explore some areas that I didn't get on my first pass, but, you know, it definitely, I can see that, you know, it's one of those things that adds to the realism factor, but I wonder if that will get annoying. Hopefully these caves and these mini dungeons aren't too big, because I don't want to be doing a half-hour walkthrough to get back to the beginning of the cave. But, you know what, it makes logical sense. I mean, also, I believe while you're in the cave, I don't know if you can do the travel, actually. I don't think you can. And I don't know if later you get a spell that will get you out. But I never did. I never got to that level. I did get some nice booty. I got some more advanced, some armor sets. They were just, it was pretty much what I was wearing. I was wearing some worn armor, and it was the exact same armor type. I forget exactly what it was, but it was the exact same armor type I was wearing. It was just it was in very good shape. So I put that stuff on instead. Once I got out, it was another fun thing is that it was no longer nighttime, it was daytime, and there was a huge fight going on outside the cave. There was a guard who was fighting a bandit, and these guys were carrying on this crazy conversation, and they were saying, you know, the bandit was like, oh, you'll never catch me, and the guard was going on, and I didn't know what was going on, so I attacked the guard. The guard, he looks at me and yells at me and goes, not me, you idiot, attack him. So I jump up on top of the hill, and the bandit's like trying to, you know, say, you know, some funny things or some, you
mighty things. And sure enough, I quickly kill the bandit. And then the guards comes over and thanks me. And I loot the bandit, no problem. But again, just to give you an idea, it was so much fun. You know, it was like, wow, you know, just in a few, you know, in an hour's time, I was able to, you know, steal a horse, find this cave, explore this cave, kill this boss monster, jump out, go in to see a bandit for attacking a guard in the middle of the middle of the street here. Took out the bandit actually after I almost killed the guard, and jump back on my horse and go on my merry way. And again, this wasn't pre-scripted. This was just the world. You know, this is just something I was able to find. It was making my own little adventure there, and I was having a grand old time. So I went back to my main quest. Actually, I decided instead of making the horse go all the way back, because it took a while, I decided just to zip on and use the instant transportation. No problem. Went to the Wayden Priory. I spoke with Joffrey. I found him, no problem. And then he told me I had to find the town of Kvatch. And at Kvatch, I would be able to find the heir to the throne. And that is actually voiced by, Michael Biehn, the guy who played Boromir in Lord of the Rings. So from there, I went to the town. I went to Kvatch instantly. I did the instant travel to Kvatch. I spoke with some people at the camp. The camp there, you know, they're very nice people. I was able to actually use a little bit of this. There's a mini game where you could actually change how they feel towards you, because everyone is ranked sort of their disposition to you. It's like from 1 to 100. They either really hate you or they really like you. And there's this like team speak game where it's sort of like a mini game, and you just click on different areas and then you try to either bribe them or flatter them or insult them. I forgot the exact. There's 4 different corridors that you can choose, but depending upon how you do it, it will either increase if you do a good job or decrease if you do a bad job of their disposition towards you. I did that a few times, got some people to like me, got a little bit better deal when I was selling stuff. I sold some stuff to the vendors. They didn't really have anything crazy, no big selections going on, but you did find out that some weird things were going on outside. You were outside Kvatch, but there was some weird stuff going on, and you actually had to walk up this hill to get to the top of Kvatch. And something else that was nice is that you can just listen to people talking. From there, I was able to get a few little mini quests. There was one mini quest I had to go find someone, to find, a kid. And there was another one where there was just some people talking and they needed something retrieved. So I got that mini quest. And again, it's almost like I'd say like World of Warcraft. It's just like there's lots of little quests all over the place. But there's no people with these big exclamation points over your head. You actually have to listen to them and talk to them to find the quest. But it's usually not too hard to figure out. These towns are, at least a mini town outside Kvatch, only really had 5-6 people. So you can easily go around and talk to everyone. As you walk up the hill towards the main town, one thing that came abundantly clear is that the actually outside became an inferno. Like, the sky was beautiful. It was white and clear with clouds going across the sky. As you go up the hill towards the city, it gets redder and darker and meaner, and it's very gradual. And then by the time you get to the top, it feels like you're in hell itself. The sky is all like a fiery red. It feels like everything's going crazy on fire, and sure enough, guards rush up to you, and you see a huge Oblivion Gate. And Oblivion, by the way, is the hell of this world. They asked that we didn't go in, and so I was not able to go into the Oblivion Gate. I didn't go in because I was told not to, but it was very impressive. The guards are telling you, they hold back, the gate's appearing, all hell's breaking loose, there's imps jumping out of the gate left and right. But I was able to get into the town of Kvatch. You could go around the gate. So one of the things I did is I went around the gate. You can go in, there's a front, and there's actually 2 sides of the gate, and you could go in either side. But you could just go around it. And so I just went around the gate, went into the town of Kvatch. There was 3 imps that attacked me and killed me. And then Pete laughed at me because he thought it was very funny. But anyhow, it was the first time I actually died in the game. Good news is that it saved right outside Kvatch. So I started up again, went back, and instead of going around the gate into the town of Kvatch and fighting those imps and getting my butt kicked, I said, okay, I'm going to run to the church and find the prince or the long-lost heir and talk to him. So went into the church, talked to the prince a bit, It was really well done. You know, very good voiceover. Got yet another quest, and you can see everything. It was like red and smoky and evil, and the whole town was just engulfed in this this evilness of doom. And from there, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go somewhere a little bit happier. So instead, I jumped out of that city. I ran around town. And I went to one of the main cities. And in one of the main cities, they actually had guilds there because I wanted to check out the guilds and see how those work. It started to rain again in the city itself, which was very cool. I actually found the wanted poster where there was a thief that was wanted. I read the poster. One of the nice things is then throughout the entire game is that, and I even went back to Gavash and tried this out, is that that was now added to your speech options, is that you can ask about this guy who was wanted. And I went back and the same people I was talking to earlier in the game now had new options and you could talk to about. So, you know, it was almost like a quest that was added just by you reading this wanted poster. You now had this quest automatically added to your quest log. From there, I actually was able to find the Mage Guild pretty easily, the Magic Guild. I was just asked the guards. They told me where it was. I was able to find it very quickly. Went to the Magic Guild and got, again, to see more of the Radiant AI in action. One of the nice things is I was there in the middle of the night. I was talking to some of the people walking around. They said that, you know, actually some of them weren't even all that nice to me. You know, they were saying, oh, you know, you should join the guild. You're a mage, you know, definitely join the guild. But, you know, the person you need to talk to, she's asleep right now, and you'll have to wait till morning. And there was actually people, I actually saw people going into their beds, going to the rooms and resting. And I could have done the same thing. In fact, what I did is I actually woke a few of them up. They didn't seem too happy when I would do that. But they would pop out of bed and sort of talk to me, and not too happy. He's like, yes, what do you want? Of course, I could buy magic spells from all these people. And there was areas on the top of the floors that were totally locked. Something about this is in the guilds, all the locks were, impossible. They were like the hardest difficulty level to open. So it wasn't something I could just easily open. Something else is in the guilds, or when you're inside the house, everything is... you can pick up, but your hand will change to a red hand, which means that that object belongs to someone else. And if you're seen taking it, then you're stealing it. And all of a sudden, they no longer like you. And it's going to take a lot of doing to make them like you again. So be very careful. Try not to steal anything in plain sight. So I rested. You can rest very easily. You just press some buttons, and you can say how long you want to rest for. If you want to rest an hour, 2 hours, three. Since it was midnight or so, I rested 8 hours to morning. From there, I was able to talk to the head of the guild very quickly. You know, she said, oh, you're a mage. Very nice. You want to join the guild? Poof, you're an initiative. I was, you know, the lowest member of the guild. Eventually, I was told by Pete, you could rise up and run the guild if you really want to. I was given yet another little quest to try out, you know, some mage power. From there, I also had some fighting ability, so I went across the street, went to the Fighters Guild. It was interesting because since I was primarily a mage, I definitely had a bit more, I don't know, it definitely felt a bit more at home. The Fighting Guild, you know, they said, oh, you know, join the Fighting Guild, but I definitely didn't seem to have as much camaraderie in the Fighting Guild as I did in the Magic Guild, where they definitely were talking to me more, seemed to give me more options, more that I can do. I don't know if that was just the scripting or the Radiant AI, but it definitely felt like I was more at home at the Mage Guild, since that was my primary character. I then tried to join the Fighters Guild. Pretty much the same thing as before. You can join it and you get some quests, and then as you go and take all these quests, you can advance up throughout your career in these guilds. And then finally, I actually then left the city and was greeted by somebody who said, you know, shadowy guy who said, oh, hey, you want to join the Thieves Guild? Or he didn't tell me exactly what it was, actually. I'm giving it away. But he said, oh, you know, if you want to, you know, interested in some deviant or shadow activities, meet me outside this place at midnight and we'll talk then. And sure enough, it's very easy since you have the rest capability. I went to the designated location, figured out what time it was, rested until midnight, and sure enough, this guy shows up, and he gives me some secret information to join the Thieves Guild. And nice little touch there. You know, it looked like it was automatic. The way it would work is that you can just, you know, after you start to inquire about the guilds, this guy would come up to you and ask you to join the Thieves Guild. But it's done, you know, on the sly. It's not like, oh, where's the Thieves Guild? You don't just find it. You actually have to discover it. And there was one more guild, but I couldn't find that one. I couldn't find that one in my limited time playing. But from there, I continued to play the game, you know, going around, and this, you know, just going around the world, stole a few more horses just to try them all out. They seem to be all the same different level. They seem to be the same level, which is none of them seem to be any faster than, any other. They all looked beautiful and they all looked a little different. Supposedly, I think there's four or five different levels of horse, but I think you have to increase either your capabilities or buy the better horses and, maybe stop stealing them. Maybe that was my problem. One nice thing is whenever you go to a town, your horse just shows up, so whenever I went from one town to another or the cave, when I would go outside, the horse would be there with you, so you don't have to worry about that so much. The actual AI of the actual, you know, of the actual merchants and creatures, as I said, I can sit there and I was just watching people walk from shop to shop and watching them take care of their business. You can listen to them talk and they're carrying on entire conversations. It really felt pretty amazing. One nice thing, when I was outside in the world, the lush grasses and the flowers and the bushes, really, really amazing. You could actually, anything you see that really looks like, oh, that looks like a, you know, a berry bush or something, you could walk up to it. Sure enough, you can have the ability to pick berries off that bush and then use your mortar and pestle and make poisons or make new potions from that. And I was very, you know, I was going around collecting stuff like crazy, just trying out all these different new recipes, making up things left and right, trying up new poisons. I found some ruins. There was actually a lot of ruins in the game. The ruins had different capabilities. Some of them I wasn't even totally sure. They were just glowing, and it seemed to either recharge my magicka, it would charge my health, things like that. It was there was tons of them throughout the game. The water effects, some people asked about those, really, really worked out well. As I said, it looks really nice, the water. Things, you know, you could fight in the water as you would outside. The water acts like it would with water, is that if you have a torch and you jump in the water, out goes the torch, and you got to light a new one when you get out. By the way, torches do run out over time, so your torch will just burn out because it's out. It's down to a nub, and then you have to start over with a new torch. I did a couple more baby quests throughout. I don't really want to go too much more detail. Don't want to spoil anything for anyone who's probably... These are all very similar quests you'll probably get when you first join the guilds, when you first go to Kavash. So I don't really want to give anything away. But again, you can feel that this was like the beginning of a very, very long story. You know, with the Mage's Guild, you can feel, oh boy, this can really get very long and advanced, where I, like, you know, fight my way up the ranks and then become the head of the Mage's Guild. I did see the arena, but I didn't go in and didn't fight. There's an arena, for those of you who are unfamiliar with the game, where you can just sort of go in and fight. And there's a... You can advance throughout the arena to increase your fighting skills and to get, you know, various trinkets and magic items and so forth. I didn't do that. I did find it, but I didn't go into it. I did, you know, ride my horse around, just exploring, just, you know, seeing all the sights. Many times I was attacked by imps just flying around. I was attacked by wolves, some undead. Some people, and undead, man, they were tough. They were a pain in the neck to deal with, let me tell you. The fire worked real well on them, though. Got more magic spells than I knew what to do with. I think I had like 30 magic spells by the end. Really, the fireball seemed to be the best. I had an ice-type bolt. I had a healing spell. Those are the ones I really used the most. I think I had a lock-picking spell. Yeah, I did. I had a lock-picking spell, but my lock-picking ability was pretty good, so I just used that. So it looks like even if you don't use, you know, if you don't become a master lockpick, you could then, you know, if you go some other direction, if you become a magic user, you'll be able to then even pick the most difficult locks over time by having spells that do that sort of stuff. And as for the merchants themselves, I never really got to see really advanced wares. I was only really at the very basic levels. And, oh, yes, and also finally leveling up. Leveling up was very easy. At a certain point of time, eventually you get enough skills that you get told that you get to level up. You have to rest. You rest over a period of time, then you wake up, and then you could assign more points to your skills and increase in capabilities. But one thing about this game is you're always increasing capabilities just by using your abilities. The more you lockpick, the better you get at lockpicking. The more you're fighting, the better you're getting at fighting. So the leveling almost seemed like just a little bit of a bonus. You know, just by living the world and just by doing things, you're increasing in capabilities and skills anyhow. Overall, I would say, you know, between the PC and the Xbox 360, since this thing is coming out in 2 weeks, I would say the PC version was a little better. I actually liked it more. I thought the controller was a little tighter since using a mouse. I didn't like the keyboard as much because the key layout was a little weird. You could redo it, of course, but it still was a little odd. But the graphics were just a little bit better. It was just a little bit nicer. I was sitting right next to the Xbox 360. Some people said, well, maybe you like the PC version because you were sitting right next to the monitor as opposed to the Xbox 360. I was actually sitting the exact same distance for both, and it just was... the resolution was just a little bit better. Ironically, the Xbox 360 version monitor was much bigger than my PC monitor, obviously, since it was this huge plasma I was sitting right in front of. It just was a slight difference. But you know what? We're talking about apples and oranges here. And we're talking about, oh, the Xbox version is a 9.5 in terms of graphics and the PC version's a 10. All right? There's such a subtle difference. And some people will probably argue that, no, I'm crazy. The Xbox version looked better anyhow. So it's sort of a minute point. The control, as I said, I kind of like the PC a little better just because the mouse is just better for the first-person point of view and even the third-person point of view. Loading time, again, both are super fast. The PC was a little bit better than the Xbox, but we're talking about a couple of seconds. Sound was excellent. A lot of people ask me, oh, what about vampires and some of the other cool creatures and trolls and all that? I didn't see any of that, unfortunately. Even after playing for 6 hours, I kept seeing the same creatures. I tried to see some new ones. I think I saw some, it was like some zombies, some skeletons, as I said, wolves. I saw some deer. I saw imps, goblins, rats, giant rats, and I think that's it. That's all, unfortunately, all I saw. I didn't see any vampires or anything else. I guess, as again, this is a huge, monstrous game that can take a long time to play. So, you know, in a weird way, I'm glad, because I'd be pretty disappointed, because last thing is I'd want to do is see everything in the first 6 hours of play. If I play 6 hours and I see everything, I'm going to be done with this game very quickly. If I play 6 hours and I'm just scratching the surface, I'm going to keep playing this game, because I want to see everything. And this is a game that you feel like when you see that world map and you realize, a lot of people ask me, oh, the 16 square miles, does it feel like 16 square miles? And I have to say, because 16 square miles is like, what the heck does that mean? Let me just put it this way. It's big, okay? It's a big world. I was traveling around and I found just a handful of dungeons, and I knew there was over 200 in this game, and I was like, man, I'm spending hours and I'm just finding one or two, three dungeons at most, and I'm like, this thing, and they have 200, I can imagine it's going to take me a long, long, long time. Probably comparable to San Andreas, in terms of size. A lot of people are like, you know, probably that's one of the biggest games you've ever played. I'd say it's like that, or maybe even say World of Warcraft, like the size of the entire world. It's that big. I mean, it's a monstrous, monstrous world. You're going to get a horse right away, because you can walk around, but it's going to take forever. You want a horse, I'll tell you that much. But overall, I know it's tough to say. You will need a killer machine, I think, for the PC version. I will say that. I played it on a killer machine with everything turned on. People worried about the graphics. People worried about the shadows. I wouldn't worry. All those things you're worried about, it looks fantastic. There's shadows and everything. Blades of grass have shadows, for God's sakes. The effects, weather effects were fantastic. The night and day changing was amazing. The Radiant AI was really well done. The only thing I would say, the only couple of negatives I would say, is that some of the textures repeated over and over again in the dungeon the cave dungeons I was in. Like, for instance, you would see the same type of cave sections over and over again. But that was kind of minor. The creatures, too, you know, after you see your 20th imp, but that's any game. And there's different types of imps you see, and as I said, they mixed it up very nicely throughout. A few other things, I would say the sound was pretty good. It was a little choppy on the PC, but I think that was actually, believe it or not, this actually had nothing to do with the game. I think Windows was actually acting a little odd on the machine I was on, because it wanted to reboot once or twice because it wanted to update itself. So I think that was more of a Windows problem than a PC problem than anything else. But it was fine, and after I rebooted the machine a few times, I think Windows just had to patch itself. It was fine after that. I had no problems. The controls on the Xbox, as I said, it was a little tricky to control, especially like if you're using magic or bow and arrow. But overall, it was fine. As I said, there's nothing. There's no showstoppers. You know, I played this thing for almost an entire day on both systems, and there was nothing that stuck out and said to me, "Oh man, that's one thing that just stinks about this game," and I can see it as a major problem. But everything worked out great. You know, the inventory system, the way to control and select your quests, the mappings, everything, you know, magic, everything. Everything was smooth as silk. They did a really great job at you know, just spending a long time at really hammering out every single issue to make sure every aspect of this game was really super smooth. The graphics are second to none. The AI is spectacular. I really couldn't find any major flaws with these games. And as you can hear, I'm like sitting here just stretching to think of anything negative to say because I really can't. And I can't wait to play this game. As I said before, last week I had my itch. It's been 2 weeks since I played. I still have my itch. I can't wait to get my hands on it. If you guys like role-playing games, I would strongly recommend you get this. Give it a try. If you like, you know, open-ended games, you have to give this game a try. If you like the games where you can just go on and do anything. But I think this will be the first killer after the Xbox 360 and for the PC too. You know, it's really good. And there's my preview of Elder Scrolls IV Oblivion. If you have any additional questions, feel free to write me. And I am usually pretty good at writing guys back right away. You could also just go to the forums and ask some questions, and I'll try to answer them. As I said, I have pages here, but I really don't want to go on for this too many hours and don't want to spoil too many things. But there's a lot going on in this game, and I think you're going to really enjoy it. With that, let's get to the retro review this week.
Gaming Steve's Retro Review!
So my retro review this week is Planescape Torment for the PC. Now, this is one of those games, maybe you've heard of it, maybe you've never heard of it, but it was made by Black Isle Studios. It came out, I believe, December 12th, 1999, and it's a little more than 5 years ago, or 6 years ago, should I say, and it was... It runs on the Infinity Engine, which is the same engine that, you know, Baldur's Gate. It's sort of a, you know, those games are a little more advanced, but yeah, it's the same game more or less as the Baldur's Gate series and the Icewind Dale series. So if you know those games, you'll know how this game works. And this game gets a lot of interesting press because it's voted by a lot of people as one of the greatest games of all time. But I also know a lot of people who don't really enjoy this game. And the main reason is that this is not even traditional, but it's a role-playing game. If you know how the Infinity Engine works, it's, you know, it's similar in that sense. But the story is so deep, so complex, so well-written, and just so big that there's a lot of people who just see this and say, okay, where's the game? And then they stop playing it. But let me tell you, I'm telling you right now, if you like really strange stories that are extremely long, extremely deep, very complex, and looking for something really to sink your teeth into and to see something take place in a world that's sort of like the most bizarre Dungeons & Dragons settings you've ever seen in your entire life, and if you like Icewind Dale or Baldur's Gate, then you got to find this game. It's simple as that. There is a lot of text in this game, a huge amount of text, but it is well worth it. In fact, I was reading that an interview with the developers when I was doing a little bit more research, because it's been a couple of years since I played this. They said that there was over 1 million words of text in the game, which is the size of one volume of Encyclopedia Britannica. So that gives you an idea of just how big this game is. But let me tell you a little bit about it before I scare you off, because that's not my goal here. I just want you to know what you're in for, because the thing is, I don't want you to be disappointed. I don't want you to think, oh, I don't understand Steve. He said this game was so good. All I'm doing is reading here. Yeah, well, you know what? It's worth it. It takes place, and you begin in this. It takes place in the world of Planescape, which was, I think it was like either Dungeons & Dragons version 2 rules. It was this weird world that I can't even describe it. It's sort of this this location where things come into existence if you believe they come into existence, and it's just bizarre to say the least. It is you take place as the Nameless One, and you wake up on this mortuary slab. You have no idea where you are and who you are, and next to you is this chattering skull named Bort, who flutes over him and informs you that you're the Nameless One. And the only reason is because he read this information that's written on your back on a tattoo, and that you should read your journal. And you pick up your journal, and you have to find someone named Farad. And that's it. That's all you know. So the game starts off is that you're this guy who seems to be immortal, who can't die, and you have to figure out how to become mortal again and to die. So right from the start, this game starts off immediately with one of the most interesting premises ever, is that you are an immortal soul that needs to figure out how to kill himself to win the game. So you actually can't die in the game, by the way. It's sort of brutal. It's not just you die. It's almost like eternal torture. But it's cool. You can lose limbs and they come right back. If you die, you actually end up waking up on the slab again with no memory. So there is a penalty in this game if you die. If you die, you got to start over. So you don't really want to do that. But this is such a strange location. You start off. So first of all, you start off this grotesque guy that's put together with it's hundreds of scars, you know, all over his body. These tattoos all over him. You have no idea what the heck's going on, and your best friend is a floating skull. So that sort of gives you an idea how this world works. As I said, the Planescape setting is sort of the strange setting that sort of has all these different existences, these planes of existences that sort of have merged in one location. It's nearly impossible to describe, but it's sort of as close as I'm going to get. For instance, there's this one very cool concept in the game is where people keep asking what your name is, and if you keep saying, you throughout conversations, if you say that your name is Adam, or it's Adam, and you keep saying that over and over again, eventually Adam appears out of nowhere, and he claims that he's an old friend of yours, even though he's never existed before in his entire life. You, just by talking about him, have created him out of thin air, and then, in fact, in another conversation, you can debate him out of existence, and he just pops out of existence. And that gives you an idea of just how deep this writing is. And there's tons of things like this in the game where throughout the game, there's not just one set path. There's sort of one set path with thousands of branches. And you can go down any one of these branches anytime you want. And you can just, you know, it's sort of like, you know, I can't even think of it. It's sort of, you know, one main game with thousands of side quests. And if you want to just go through and plow through the main game, you can do that. But if you really want to go through and involve and get involved with this world, you can do that as well. One of the things I'm going to talk about real quick that makes this game so unique is the non-player characters. And let me tell you, this has not only some of the best non-player characters ever in history for any game, but it has maybe the best voiceover cast ever, period. I mean, it's an incredible voiceover cast. First of all, you play the Nameless One, and he's voiced by Michael T. Weiss, who is Jared from The Pretender, if any of you guys watched him. Next you have Mort, who's this chaotic, good, floating, talking skull, and he's one of the greatest characters of all time. He's very funny. He's always making jokes and ripping on you. Since he's chaotic good, he's like all over the place. He's total nut. And he's voiced by Rob Paulsen, who is Arthur from The Tick, if you ever watched that show. He's been in a million other things, but he does the voice perfectly. And he's Mort's often, if you ever see these polls, it's like some of the best sidekicks of all time, and he's always ranked like in the top 10 because he's so funny. There's another one, Dakon, who's a lawful neutral fighter mage, and this is voiced by Mitch Pileggi, and that's right, that's Assistant Director Skinner from the X-Files. I think I mispronounced his name, Pileggi, but yeah, that just gives you an idea. So there's another one. You have Anna, who's this chaotic, neutral fighter thief, who's basically a human with a tail, and she's very self-conscious of it. And Anna is voiced by Sheena Easton. So, yeah, that's right. Sheena Easton, the pop singer. So, and I haven't even gotten to the big names yet. These are just sort of the throwaways. I kid you not. That's how good this voice talent is. Another NPC you come into contact, and these are all characters you could join and add to your party and then talk to them, you know, quite frequently. You have Fall from Grace, who was one of the coolest NPCs you'll ever find in any game. She's a lawful neutral cleric who worships no god. She's formed from pure chaos and evil, and she runs a brothel, but yet she seems to be, I won't give anything more away, but she's actually voiced by Jennifer Hale, who's in Baldur's Gate, as well as a million others, and she also played the voice of Samus Aran in Metroid Prime and Metroid Prime 2. So she's actually done a ton of voiceover work, but she's fantastic in this. We have Ignis, who's a chaotic neutral mage, who's a lot of people say he's actually really chaotic evil. They say he's chaotic neutral, but he's chaotic evil. A lot of people say this is perhaps the best written chaotic evil person ever of any game of all time. And I have to agree, this guy is unbelievably crazy. He's actually a pyromaniac mage. So this guy's setting fire to everything, including himself, and he's chaotic evil, and he joins your party. So you could just imagine what things happen when he joins your party. And this is by the guy who voices him is Charles Adler, who played Coach Oleander in The Psychonauts. And anyone's played Coach Psychonauts knows how good the voiceover is good for Coach Oleander. And that alone is worth the reason to play this game. And I got two more. Yes, we have Valdor, who is an animated suit of armor who never realized that he actually died. Yes, there was a guy in this armor, and he never realized that he died, so his armor continues to live and do his work. Yeah, okay. Anyhow, this is by Keith David, who played Apollo from Disney's Hercules. But last but not least, you have Nordum, who's this chaotic neutral fighter. And this guy is so hard to get. Get this. This is how hard this guy is to get in the game. You can play the entire game and easily never get this character, but it's well worth it. You actually need to go into this game, purchase this thing called the Morden Cube. You have to then enter the cube, where it's this crazy maze. You then have to set the difficulty level of the game up to the very highest setting, and only then will you find this guy, Nordum. And it is voiced by none other than Dan Castellaneta, Homer Simpson himself. Yes. That is the voiceover cast. Sheena Easton, Homer Simpson, Coach Oleander, it's like Assistant Director Skinner from The X-Files, The Pretender. I mean, this is a crazy, crazy cast, but it totally is worth it. So, anyhow, that's just to give you an idea of the different characters you run into. The writing, as I said, is nuts. I can't even get into it, but they talk a lot about philosophical issues, talk about what it means to actually be and to exist. Your main character is really great because he's a fighter and a thief and a mage, and you can switch at any time. So you get to be a fighter if you want to be a fighter. If you want to become a mage, you become a mage. If you want to become a thief. So people like the multi-class. This is better than multi-class because you can actually just switch on the fly to whatever you want. The way to increase your abilities in this game is weird. You actually have to get tattoos and, like, tattoo yourself. And as you get new tattoos, you actually increase your abilities. For the other characters, your NPCs in the party, to actually increase their abilities, it's not just fighting and getting experience. You actually need to talk to them and talk about, you know, philosophical issues and talk about, like, theological issues. And only after talking about them, like, the existence of life and death, do you actually then increase their abilities and make them go up levels. This game is a crazy game. Very, very deep game. But hopefully that's enough. I mean, you know, it's hard to really talk about this game without giving too much away. But if you like the Infinity Engine, if you don't mind playing the Baldur's type game, then you'll be right at home. The graphics are quite beautiful. They're a little dated, but for what they are, but they're beautiful graphics nonetheless. The settings are bizarre beyond belief. The game itself is unlike anything you've ever played and probably will ever play a game. This is one of those games that at the time, and this is 1999, really during the height of RPGs for the PC, this was considered daring and nuts back then. So you can only imagine something like this would pretty much never come out because it would just totally fail, most likely. And even then, it didn't do all that great to begin with. But if you can find it, it's tricky to find because Black Isle Studios and Interplay are totally out of business. You can find it every so often. You look around. I'm sure if you looked on the net, you can find it somewhere. I did go to Frapper, and a few people are selling it here and there. But I think you could find it at eBay, things like that. But it's well worth it if you're looking for a really good role-playing game to take a look and play. But 9.5 out of 10, really a fantastic game that's unlike anything you've ever played that you'll remember for a very long time. Planescape Torment for the PC. I'd say go get it.
Game.
Next, we have Name That Game, my weekly contest where I will play a clip, and then you tell me the name of the game and the platform it's on, and if I call your name, you write me back and give me your address, and I'll send you out a prize. So let's listen to last week's clip.
Nostro Bovis, Virata, Mastodoc, Kalpa.
So not a lot of people got this one. I kind of knew this would happen. This was a tricky one because people were complaining that the other ones were so easy. Well, now you can probably not complaining anymore. But this one was tough. This was Sacrifice for the PC. There's, I think, less than 10 people who got this one right. And I had a couple of really, actually, someone wrote Nox for the PC, which was a really good Diablo clone. That was a good guess, but not quite. No, it was Sacrifice for the PC, which was made by Shiny. It's an RTS that came out in the year 2000, and it is one of the weirdest. Talk about weird games. It's like the weird game show. Planescape Torment and now this. But yeah, it was an RTS that just all the creatures were summoned, and you had all these wacky creatures that were fighting each other, and that actually was a chant. That's what that sound was you chanting one of the more common creatures, I believe, in existence. I think it was a chant to summon a creature. It was either that or a heal spell. But anyhow, let's see, since you had a pretty good chance, if you knew this one, because there was only about 10 people who got it right. Hello, Steve. Good choice this week, Steve. The 2000 release of Sacrifice for the PC is a great game. It was actually selected as IGN's Strategy Game of the Year over Command & Conquer Red Alert 2. Sacrifice is one of my favorite games, which I go back and play from time to time when I'm burnt out on the new releases. Thank you, Nathan, a.k.a. Mantis. So, Nathan, a.k.a. Mantis, you've won. Yay. So send me your address, and I will send you out I have a Mario diorama, which is super freaking cool. It's a Super Mario Brothers diorama. It's a nice little thing you put on your desk. It has some magnets so you can rearrange Mario and everyone. And I also have shirts. I think I only got medium and large left, some gaming T-shirts. And I still have a couple of the game stamps left, the European game stamps. So let me know which one of these you want, Nathan. But let's get to the next game this week, and maybe I'll make it a little easier. Let's see.
But none of it was real. It was just my head going to mush. But then, one day, I had a visitor, and that's when everything changed. He said his name was Calypso. He ran some kind of strange contest, and he was looking for people like me to be a part of it.
So was that one any easier, huh? Huh? Does anyone find that one easier? Well, I hope so. But once again, send your entry to game@gamingsteve.com. Send me the name of the game and the platform it's from. So if it's a PC game or an arcade game or whatever. The only reason I don't know if I really need that anymore, but just like you send me the platform. But send me the name of the game and platform, and if you're right, you go into the big bowl of entries, and if I pull you out next week, you win. So good luck to you all, and let's get to show mail.
Show mail!
So welcome to Show Mail, where I answer your questions. You can send me mail to pretty much feedback@gamingsteve.com. That's usually the best place to send me questions. And I prefer audio questions if you send me an MP3 file. But if not, I will answer once in a while. I answer text messages. And I didn't get any, I think I got one, but I didn't have time to look at it. But I didn't get any email voicemail questions. So this week, ta-da, I am going to answer your text questions. So first up, I have a question from Brad. I have a question for you. With all the recent changes Sony has done with Star Wars Galaxies and now EverQuest 2, they have completely changed the system. You can now start out as a Necro instead of questing for it as level 20. Do you think that Sony is doing this to entice more people into the game world, or do you think Sony's gotten a lot of heat of it because of so many complaints? In the long run, do you think this will affect Sony and their MMO experience? Personally, for me, I enjoy the changes to EverQuest 2 and canceled my account on WoW and focusing all my time in EverQuest 2. Also, do you think that Sony will do an online service for the PS3 like Xbox Live? Brad Kahn. Brad Kahn, who writes me every single week. So, hey, Brad. Actually, a couple people write me every week, it seems. But I tell you, I would prefer if you sent me voicemail questions. And I tell you, trust me, you don't sound too silly. I know all you think you do, but you sound fine. But so yeah, real quick, this one might take a while to answer. I'll try to do this one as fast as possible. But Star Wars Galaxies EverQuest 2 is by Sony Online Entertainment, and the guy who runs that is called John Smedley. Yeah, I think John Smedley is how you pronounce his name, and he runs this. Now you have to think about this. This guy has been going around for the last 6 years saying that, oh, Sony Online, they pretty much own everything. EverQuest has had 400,000 people. They have the King of the Hill. Every game that comes around has failed. They get maybe 100,000 people if they're lucky, or 200,000 people at most. You even have like The Sims Online, which has like 10,000 people in it. You know, every game comes and goes and totally fails. And then WoW comes along and now has 6 million plus people playing this thing. So I'm sure Sony board of directors is going to John and saying, what the heck? Why don't we have 6 million people? And this guy has got to be thinking, oh boy. It's like, why can't we do this? What happened? And this guy has got to have a tough damn job right now, because he's got to be thinking every day, it's like, why does WoW have millions of people? And why do even games like Lineage and these other games, why do they have millions and millions of people and we can barely keep 100,000 people in our game? Why? And one of the main reasons is, yeah, it's accessibility. In EverQuest 2, they had this very cool system where you can become, say, a necromancer, and first you start out, I believe, as a mage, and then only, you can start out like as a mage or a fighter, it's like this core class, and there was only like 4 or 5 of them, and then only when you got to level 20, then you could specialize and become a necromancer. Now, in theory, this was an excellent idea, because like, oh, you start out one class, and then you eventually go up to a later one, but it didn't really work out, because say you wanted to start us up a second character and you wanted to try out something new, like a monk, you couldn't, because you had to start and go up to level 20, then you can start it out. So they changed it so you can start out as all these characters. Same thing with becoming a Jedi. I mean, Star Wars Galaxies, you can start as a Jedi. You can start as a Jedi. You had to play the game, play for thousands of hours, and then maybe, just maybe, if you were really, really good and really, really, really lucky, because not everyone could do it, and you played for months and months of time and thousands of hours, you become a Jedi. And that, you know what? That's realistic. But you know what? It's not fun. In the new version, you want to become a Jedi? Poof, you're a Jedi. You know what? The people who play these games and the people that make WoW so successful and Lineage and all these other games are casual gamers. They will play just WoW and nothing else. You know, and that's it. And maybe they'll play a few other games, but they don't play, you know, they're casual gamers that sort of turn into hardcore gamers. And these games like EverQuest 2 and Star Wars Galaxies were appealing just to the hardcore players. And you know what? Star Wars is a perfect example. Like, this is a license that had no reason to fail. And it did. It failed spectacularly. You know, like what? 100,000, 200,000 people played this game? Millions. Not just millions. Tens upon hundreds of millions of people worldwide love Star Wars Galaxies. And it's totally failed because it wasn't accessible. It wasn't easy to get into. And yeah, maybe it was more realistic, is that you had to kill yourself to become a Jedi, because that's what it's like in the Jedi world. But this isn't the world of, you know, this isn't the Jedi world. This is a game. And if I want to become a Jedi, poof, I'm a Jedi. And I remember, like, when, for instance, WoW was first coming out, one of the big things they said, you know, you start out this game and you're fighting real creatures. You're not fighting giant rats. You know, you're fighting skeletons and goblins and gnolls and stuff right away. Is that it's not like, oh, you have to earn the ability to get up to the big stuff. Now, in this game, you know, like right away, in the first 10 levels of stuff, you're fighting like mini dragons. I mean, you know, it's fun right away. And that's one of the things lacking from these games. So I think, you know, John is like taking a lot of crap right now for trying to make these games more accessible. But I have to tell you, he's doing the right thing. He really is. And I know a lot of people who do say they actually enjoy Star Wars Galaxies and EverQuest 2 a lot more now. The only question is if it's too late to really make these games more accessible. And then, will Sony do an online service for the PS3 like Xbox Live? Yes, everyone's been saying, I forgot the official name, it's some goofy-ass name they have for it, but they are making this online service for the PS3. The only thing is, Xbox Live took 4 years for them to build up, and the infrastructure and architecture for that are so insanely complex that it's going to take them a long time for them to build up something similar for the PS3. And, you know, originally with the PS2, it was sort of Wild Wild West, is that anyone could do it any way they wanted, and they didn't really support it. But then Xbox came along and Microsoft said, no, we have one system and everyone has to integrate into the system, which is ironically the reason EA didn't want to become part of Xbox or do games in the Xbox, because they didn't want to have anything to do with that proprietary system. They wanted to have their own system, but then they worked out a deal. Is now Sony's come around and said, you know what, maybe we should make one online system where everything is controlled. But you know what, that's such a killer. You can't just do that. It's so hard to do. So they're going to launch it, but it's going, I think, going to take quite some time, or they're going to have to do really small steps, almost like the DS is doing with Nintendo with their Wi-Fi system. You know, it's not very complex and they're doing little baby steps, but each step is really, really done well. Next up, and by the way, yeah, I'm going to answer a whole bunch of Oblivion questions too. I forgot about that because a whole bunch of people have asked me. I have, hello, Steve. I've seen the Xbox 360 around at stores, yet it's only the core system, since the hard drive version is basically sold out here in Europe. But a longtime PlayStation user, I'm tempted to buy the core system. I have no problem having no Xbox Live, since my mantra is that online gaming is for PCs, but holds me back is total lack of interest in game. The only game interested for the 360 is Cameo. Now, what should I do? Buy a core system, or must I buy the hard drive version? And if I buy Cameo, can I expect more of these type of games, or must I wait until PS3 is out? Lawrence Bly, who's written to me quite a bit. The Xbox 360, I've talked about this in the past, the core system. I would just strongly advise, if you're not in any big system, don't get it, because it's a total waste of money. You don't get the hard drive, you don't get the wireless controller, you're going to end up having to buy those things. The hard drive, you don't really need the hard drive, you know, as you see, you need it for Xbox Live, and in theory you can buy a memory card for all your games, but the memory card is only a couple dollars less. I don't know what the prices are in Europe, but it's only a couple bucks less than the hard drive, and it doesn't have as much capability, so you might as well get the hard drive. It's a lot faster. It keeps all your games on there. You can get updates if you ever want to for Xbox. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that the wireless controller, I've said in my review of the Xbox 360, the wireless controller is the first reason alone to get the Xbox 360, and it comes with a wired controller. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because I guess you can use the wired controller for your PC and then go buy a wireless controller. So if you ever want to use a gamepad for your PC, you need the wired controller anyhow. But, you know, I would, again, try to wait, because it's just going to cost you more. It's simple as that. It's going to cost you more for the core system if you end up buying a wireless controller. If you buy in the wireless controller and the card system, the save game system, it's going to cost you the same as the premium system anyhow. So it's just a big rip, and you know what? The core system is going to be gone anyhow. And then, let's see, your other question. As for Cameo, I don't know how many of those type of games. Those are like platforming games. Platforming games are not very popular overall. They're usually released just a couple a year, and Cameo is an okay game. It actually isn't quite as good as I thought it would. Some people love that game. But right now, with games like Oblivion coming out, but it's also out for the PC, you know, there are some good Xbox 360 games coming out. There's now sort of the second wave is starting to come out. Fight Night 3 just came out, and I know people just absolutely love that game. I haven't played it enough to really give an opinion, but there is a nice second wave of games coming out. But once again, if you can wait, I would say wait. To buy the HD system. And you never know. You know what? Even if you don't like Live and you don't like it, there's a lot of things on Live, even if you never do online gaming, there's a lot of nice things on Live that you might want to do anyhow. And it's worth just checking out, to be honest with you. I, if you haven't done it, anyone out there, I would suggest you at least try it. Next, Zach. Man, this guy writes me too all the time. Won't Blizzard remake StarCraft 1? They should keep everything the same, unit, balance, maps, storyline, etc., but upgrade the game's engine and graphics. I haven't played StarCraft recently, but I believe the maximum resolution is just 800 by 600. Today it's just an eyesore. True graphics don't make the game, but if any game could use a facelift due to continued popularity, it is StarCraft. Why won't Blizzard do this? To use your sports analogy, it seems like upgrading the cameras used to film football, not inventing football 2.0. And it's by Chimp on Stilts, who's better, a.k.a. Zach. So, yeah, I've said this before, is that you're probably not going to see StarCraft 2 anytime soon, because StarCraft 1 is still, the most popular game in South Korea, period, and it's basically a sport down there, and it sells like crazy, so there's no reason for them to come out with a new version. That is a very good idea, and I've heard that by a lot of people. So why don't they just take the original StarCraft and just update the graphics and make it 3D? And you know what? They might. I don't know. But the one thing about these games is that at that level, and trust me, this is a sport, it's not as easy as you might think, because even if some of these maps are off by so much as a pixel, or some of those units are off by so much as a pixel in size, they're going to play differently, okay? I mean, these guys at this level is that, you know, things are just a few pixels away. You know, like if one base is a few pixels closer than another base, that's the difference between victory and, you know, defeat. I was thinking of like the Olympics. I just was watching the Olympics and you would see like the bobsled, the difference between like first place and 10th place was like a second. You know, it's like unbelievable. It's ridiculous how close these guys are. At that level, it's the same thing with StarCraft. At this level, just changing the thing, just changing the game a small amount will really, really change it, the way it plays. And quite frankly, having StarCraft 2.0, we'll say, or an upgraded 1.5, whatever you want to call it, then it's going to split the league. It's going to make, okay, who's playing the new version, who's playing the old version, and that's the last thing they want to do. So, you know, it's sort of an all or nothing. I would think that in theory that's a good idea for them to update the graphics, but if it's going to cause a big rift and split in the way StarCraft is played, I think they would go the whole other way and go for broke and just make a whole new version of the game, which is, you know, the same concept and the same core version, just with new updated maybe units, graphics, strategies, you know, etc. So although I think it's a good idea in theory, I think it's not really going to work in practicality. Real quick, I'll do a few more questions. Hey, Steve, what's your opinion of 5.1 surround sound headphones versus regular stereo headphones? Can't use speakers in my current living room conditions, and I would use them for gaming and some music, not bass intensive. Although I've looked at the Medusas, the Kenyo KY100, and the Zalman Theater 6, the guys over at Hard Form are completely against 5.1s. Suggest I'd rather buy something like the HD485 or the HD515 from Sennheiser, for around the same price. I was just wondering what your thoughts were. Thanks. And this is by Michael. So I actually game with headphones too, and I've been only gaming with headphones for maybe 10 years now. I strongly say there's no difference. 5.1 surround versus regular stereo. 5.1 works because you have speakers in front of you and behind you and below you. Stereo is stereo, okay? There's no difference, all right? I've heard the 5.1s, they kind of mimic it and try to fake it out, but it doesn't work, in my opinion. I'd say just get regular stereo headphones. Sennheiser is my favorite brand. In fact, the mic I'm talking to you all right now in this show is what I use. I use all their headphones. They're very good brands. They're a little expensive, but they always sound good. The most important thing I would say, by far, if you buy headphones, well, for me, I like to buy wireless. But the only problem with wireless is that batteries do run out, which sort of sucks. So you always want to have replacement batteries. Like I have my wireless headphones, I actually have 3 battery packs, so I continuously recharge them when they run out. But make sure the headphones completely overlap your entire ear. They completely encompass your whole ear, because if they sit on your ear after an hour or two, it's going to start getting uncomfortable. And also make sure the strap on top of your head is very comfortable as well. It should be nice and padded and have actually extra room. And it's hard to tell, because headphones always feel good after 5-10 minutes. But after, it's like everyone who buys, say, an iPod, everyone buys iPods. And I tell everyone who buys an iPod, you're going to have to buy new headphones, because the headphones that come with it stink. And everyone's like, oh, they're okay. And then they use it for a week or two, and they come back, and they say, okay, I need new headphones. Because whenever you use these things for an extended period of time, you can really start feeling them. Same thing with headphones. After an hour or two of putting on headphones that are pressing against your ears, against your head, and, you know, it's pushing down on top of your head, it starts to get annoying. And you should have a headphone that feels so lightweight and just sort of part of your body that you can play with this thing all day and you never even know that you're wearing the headphones. And I would also strongly suggest you go try them on and go to a stereo store, specialty stereo store. You can try on these headphones and actually listen to them. They're all over the place. No matter where you live, you should be able to find at least one specialty stereo store. And if not, just if you see the ones that are really big, that have those monster headphones that completely encompass your hair and go up against the side of your face, those are the ones you want. Let's see. What else? I want to finish this up. So I'll take one more question. Let's see. I got two here. Which one should I do? I'll do this one. Steve, I enjoy Attack of the Show, X-Play, and Icons on G4, but I couldn't care less for the rest of the show. Some of their dumb original programming has been canceled in favor of reruns of The Man Show and Star Trek. How would you run this video game network, or is it doomed to follow the Spike TV formula of airing mostly retrans? Jeff in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Wow, that is a fun question. How would I run G4? Well, let me tell you real quick what's going on with G4, and I've said this before in the past, is G4 is an interesting idea, and it's a good idea, is that you try to make a network that appeals to males age 18 to 34, which is one of the coveted advertising demographics, and you do that by, having a video game network. And they're thinking, okay, we'll have a video game network, and then all these, you know, kids will show up that are, you know, either younger or in their 18 to 34, and then we can charge a lot. It's almost like a specialty magazine in a way. There's these specialty magazines that you ever see. They're called enthusiast magazines, and they don't have a big subscription base. Heck, a video game magazine is basically an enthusiast magazine, but Spike TV or even Lifetime or even MTV for that matter are almost enthusiast channels. You know, they don't get a huge amount and they don't get as much people coming to them as, say, ABC or NBC, but the very small demographic is so hardcore that you can actually get pretty good advertising rates because you know which target audience you're trying to hit. So that's kind of what they were trying to do there. Spike TV is kind of doing the same thing. What happened with G4 is that they probably realized that all these shows, maybe they weren't working, and for less money, they could buy reruns of The Man Show and Star Trek and air those and probably get the exact same ratings, if not better ratings, than Attack of the Show or X-Play or Icons or any of those other shows. And it's a heck of a lot cheaper and a lot less, you know, worrisome. You don't have to worry about talent. You don't have to worry about studio space. You don't have to worry about constantly creating new shows. And the advantage of something like Attack of the Show with X-Play is that you own it forever. And that's sort of nice. But the downside of those shows, especially, say, Attack of the Show, is that they're kind of time-sensitive. It's not something that will really work so well in reruns. X-Play kind of works in reruns. But the whole premise of the whole network was sort of messed up from the beginning, is that they really have to make shows that work a little better, that are a little bit more timeless, that can work over long periods of time. Like Discover Magazine does a good job with this. Like for American Chopper, American Casino. I mean, I can watch American Chopper from like 3, 4, or 5 years ago. Well, I don't think it's been on that long, but you know, 3 years ago, and it doesn't really, you know, feel that much older than the show that was just aired last week, which is the most recent show. While you have something like X-Play, watching X-Play from 4 or 5 years ago is, you know, maybe fun, a blast from the past, but where everything is so time sensitive, it sort of doesn't make sense. It's like watching Siskel and Ebert or Ebert and Roper from 5 years ago. It's like, okay, why are they reviewing movies that are like long gone? So that's sort of one of the issues with the whole format of the video games and constantly trying to stay on top of this ever-changing medium. So instead, they go towards reruns. How I would run it? That's a good question. I would probably, believe it or not, continue doing what they're doing. The problem with running, well, The Man Show, I mean, they have no competition, but Star Trek was kind of silly because Spike TV, not only does Spike TV air it at better times, in my opinion, but they aired more often. So, you know, I already watch it on Spike TV. I don't need to watch it on G4 if I want to watch my Star Trek. And the other thing is that the shows that they did have were, some of them were okay. I mean, Icons is a very good show. Attack of the Show, I really don't like compared to the original Screensavers, which is about a trillion times better. And X-Play is actually, well, since it moved over to the G4, it's gotten kind of dumbed down quite a bit. But it's overall still a very decent show. I would create shows that were less dependent on time. Like, for instance, Icons is a good example. Icons will still be relevant in 5 years, as to, you know, the show that airs today, you can air in 5 years and people will still be interested in it. So again, it's hard to say how you would do that exactly, but that's sort of how I would do it, is that I would try to create shows that were more less time sensitive, that still cover the video game scene. Instead of maybe covering specific game titles, maybe cover general gaming topics that are more, you know, talking about, I don't know, like covered the gaming leagues throughout the world or covered different phenomenons, things like that. That's kind of how I would run a video game network. And you can have a couple of those time-sensitive shows, like X-Play. I would just probably keep X-Play as is and keep it and that do it with that. But there we go. And then hopefully you would hit that targeted demographic and do very well. So let's answer with some quick Oblivion questions. Let's see, I got real quick. Lucas, he wants to know, blah, blah, blah. Let's see. Why do you think that so much effort has been put into pointless things in Oblivion, such as being able to pick up any object or being able to customize your character in such a detail, but you never actually see his face afterwards? So actually, you do see his face, even when you're a third person, by the way. You don't really see his face. It sort of works like World of Warcraft, like you see his back. But when you're in the inventory screen, you do see the person's face or your character's face. But you know, being able to customize your character, you know, it's one of the big things of all role-playing games. It's one of the most fun aspects of a game is being able to change your character's appearance. And it's one of the things people love in, well, pretty much any role-playing game. And in fact, Dragon Quest VIII, which was one of my favorite role-playing games, one of the things I did not like about that is that you could not change your character's appearance more or less. Some things change, like shields and weapons, but otherwise, when you changed your armor, nothing changed. It was really annoying. But you know, people like to see it. They like to see, oh my, you know, see the bling, I'd say, on your character. And then as for being able to drop and pick up any item, you know, that's usually in these games anyhow, because those are individual objects. So they just added the ability to keep it, you know, it's like, in other words, all those skulls placed on the ground. So most games, they would place the skulls and just not make them tangible objects that you can pick up. All they did is just turn on the bits and say, okay, you can pick up these objects and put them in your inventory. And they just added some data, like, you know, how much space they take up, things like that. So that didn't take any extra programming to really add, because they had to do that anyhow. And then also you asked, and this is Lucas writes, also, if you drop an item, does it physically drop on the ground and show up on the ground? Yes, it does. It shows up on the ground, anything you drop. And can you manipulate, carry, move objects with your hand like you can in Half-Life 2? So can you, like, pile a bunch of skeletons you found in the room? Will objects stay put? Yeah, you don't have the same control like in Half-Life 2, where you're picking up things and moving them around, and then you can delicately place them on top of one another. But if you want to take a whole bunch of skulls and crossbones and things that you found and just stack them up, that if you kind of can do it, and the real-world physics will work, is that if you put something on the table and then sort of knock against the table, you'll see them roll off the table onto the ground, things like that. You can definitely do that. It's just not nearly as much control as Half-Life 2. And then real quick, I have a couple questions from Anton. And Anton, he asked, about 10 people wrote me the same question, so I'm going to just answer his email instead of answering 10 questions. First off, he wrote, how was the frame rate on the 360 version versus the PC version? So yeah, 360 version, PC version, looked fine. I didn't see any noticeable difference. The PC version was great. Actually, they both were really, really good. Maybe, you know, there was like slow ups, hiccups here and there for everything. Maybe the 360 looked a smidge slower. Maybe, but that's just generally 360s have a locked in rate, while a PC will usually refresh as fast as possible, even faster than, you know, than necessary. So that's something that's just, you know, keep that in mind. Let's see, how many things had shadows? Everything had shadows, as far as I can tell. Like, even the little blades of grass had shadows in it. So there were shadows everywhere in this game. It looked absolutely fantastic. How good was the Havoc engine used? The Havoc engine's used pretty well. I said in my preview last week, one of the cool things was I killed this, I forgot what it was, a gnome or goblin. It was one of the introductory characters that I killed. And when I actually killed him, he fell over a spigot, and you actually saw him, like, bend his back, and I've thrown people downstairs, you know, things like that. It's really well done, and it's extremely nice. And there's traps that use the Havoc's engine in some of the dungeons. So you'll definitely see the Havoc engine being used, not just as something that adds, you know, fun to the game. It's just actually is also used in a real game-like sense, where these traps will use to crush you and kill you. How about the loading times? So the loading times were very good. For the Xbox 360, like, if you went from section to section, it would be a couple of seconds. And people are complaining. It's like, oh, it's not instantaneous. You know what? A couple of seconds is fine, all right? It's a little annoying, but whatever. It's not like 30 minutes here, all right? Or WWE for the PSP, if any of you have seen that. It takes you, 6.5 minutes of loading screens? I kid you not, until you get to your actual fight, all right? You want to talk about bad loading times? That's bad loading time. Waiting 3 or 4 seconds? not so bad. The PC, lightning fast. The PC was like 1 second, 2 seconds. The PC was easily 2 to 3 times faster than the Xbox 360. And finally, how did NPCs react to you when you passed them? NPCs, they would talk to you. They would greet you. It was always a little different. Sometimes they would ignore you. Often you would hear NPCs talk to each other, and you could just sort of hang out and listen to them talking to you. But a lot of the guards, if you walked by guards and looked at them, they might look at you and say hi to you. If you're in the guild halls, especially if you're friendly with people, they'd walk up to you and say hi to you, things like that. So it was extremely realistic. It was, you know, a lot. Some would ignore you. Some would come right up and talk to you. Some would just nod to you and keep walking. But it felt great. It felt very much like a real world. So there were the questions. If you have any more, send them my way. Send your questions to feedback@gamingsteve.com and send me your MP3 questions. I'll put those on the air. I'll almost always, as long as there's nothing risque on them or anything, I'll always put those on the air. Otherwise, send me your text questions. I'll try to get to them. I can't always because there's so many, but I will do my best and try to always at least answer you and write back. And if I don't, just write me back again, and I'll try to remember the second time. So with that, let's get to final thoughts.
Game and Steve's final thoughts.
So final thoughts this week. So as I said, next week I'm going to have my 1 year anniversary show. Really don't know what I'm going to do on it yet. I don't know. Maybe I'll do something special. Maybe it'll be the same show. Maybe I'll have some special interview. I really have no idea what I'm going to do. Just trying to figure it out. I'm just still coming back from traveling all over the place. So I'm still going to put that together. And then in 2 weeks, I'm going to be at the Game Developers Conference. And oh boy, those shows, they're going to be all over the place. I don't even know when I'm going to release them. Game Developers Conference is a Monday through Friday, but the main days are this Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I'm going to be there all 5 days, but the main days are Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So I'm going to just interview as many people as I can. I'm just going to throw together shows. I'll be honest, I don't exactly know what quality they're going to be. Since it takes a while, I'm going to probably just interview people, talk to them, slap it together, throw it up, and see what comes out. It should be tons of great information since, I don't know, every single person in the industry is going to be there. And I'm just going to be walking around with my mic, just walking up to people and talking to them, interviewing them. So we'll see what we get. And if not, at the minimum, I'll be talking about what I see and what I experience. And, of course, talk about Spore and any other big breaking news that comes from the show I'll talk about on those shows. And the days that they're going to come out will be sporadic. I'll release them throughout the days as I finish up the shows. And then finally, as I said before, I will be at ICON, which is the gaming convention on Long Island, New York, on March 25th, which is a Saturday. Actually, I'm taking the red eye back from GDC Friday night to get to there, and I'm talking in I have my own auditorium to talk about the Game Developers Conference, and I'm going to talk about that on Saturday, March 25th. And then also I'm sitting on a ton of panels with some other people, other guys in the industry. And that is, if you want to find out about it, just go to iconsf.org. Iconsf.org is the Icon Gaming Convention website. And I don't know if the schedule's up there, but if you go to e-gaming, you'll see me. I'm in there and all that. And some people have asked if I can record this. I'll see what I can do if I can record these talks. Keep in mind, a lot of these talks are not just me, but there's other people, and they're in these big auditoriums, so you might not even hear the questions. So I really don't know what I'm going to do. I'll try to record them. I'll say that's all I can say. And if I can put them on the show, that's great. If not, come. I can't guarantee anything. Come to ICON. It's great. It's my favorite science fiction gaming convention, period. I love it. It's so much fun. There's everything there. It's like a big campus. If you like gaming, they have gaming. If you like guests, they have really good guests there every year. If you like, you know, comic books and buying stuff, they got tons of stuff there. It's really great. Oh, and by the way, I went last week. They had the very first comic book, New York City Comic Con, and it was nuts. I didn't think anyone even heard about this thing. It was the first one ever, and it was beyond sold out. They were kicking people out. They sold out of all the tickets. They actually told everyone to go home because they couldn't get enough in, but it was a blast. Not too much gaming stuff there. A lot of board gaming, role-playing game, but no real computer games there, unfortunately. But I think next year, because it was the Javits Center, and it was only a very small portion, but it was such a monster. I have a feeling next year it's going to be really, really big. But it was pretty good. I got to see Kevin Smith talk for an hour and a half, and he's always damn, that guy is funny. So, well, if I can be one-tenth as funny as him when I talk at Icon, I'll be pretty happy. But otherwise, that is it for this week's show. Let me know what you think about how I can increase the quality while decreasing the time it takes for me to do the review section, because I like to keep it in the show, but quite frankly, it takes up a lot of my time. And I'm just curious to hear what you guys think, what your favorite sections of the show are. I know a lot of people really like the show mail, and a lot of people really, really like the news. Those seem to be everyone's favorite sections, but I also know people love the Name That Game, that zip right to that. I know people really love the retro reviews, previews, you know, every aspect. There always seems to be someone who likes one aspect of the show more than others. So it seems to have a sort of a even following throughout, but I am curious to hear what you guys think of the show's different sections after doing this for 1 year. And also, final one thing is that, yeah, in iTunes, by the way, it's ranked now. The show, I think, is ranked. It's one of the highest ranked gaming shows. It's right up there. I think only X-Play. It fluctuates, but I think X-Play is the only one higher than it right now. Sometimes it's below the 1UP podcast. Sometimes it's above it. But definitely go in and vote if you like the show. There's a section where you can vote and give your feedback, put it in, and... With that being said, this is Gaming Steve signing off, and I will talk to you guys next week from the anniversary show, and have a good gaming week. Talk to you later. Bye.
Question or comment for Steve, please drop him a line at GamingSteve.com. You've been listening to Gaming Steve. Until next week, keep farming those experience points.